This is headed by Kristen Stewart, who's going to be 30 this year.
Wow.
That don't make you feel old. Nothing will.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins of CinemaSins.
Hello, hello.
And today we're going to be doing a mini-pod.
Water pod.
Water pod. Kristen pod?
Christy Stewry pod?
Water pod, underwater pod. Okay, whatever. It doesn't matter. Of Underwater. We're doing a review of Underwater. This is our first movie of 2020.
Yep.
We didn't do The Grudge. I don't think we will be doing The Grudge. But I heard that it was terrible anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I did as well. Is this the first? This is the first 2020 movie you've seen, right?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And there are other things coming out this week, like a Boss, and the 1917's got its own release finally after being limited and everything.
I feel like I've seen that preview for every day for a year now. The Like a Boss
movie. Yeah, Like a Boss. No, it was on everything. It was literally on every movie I watched.
I've got Salma Hayek's voice in my head talking about her boobs.
Yeah, well, and her and Jennifer Coolidge bumping into each other, and she's like, "Oh, yours is like stone," and Tiffany Haddish saying, "So we need to be those badass bitches like those women on Wonder like the ones in Wonder Woman or whatever."
After we talk about this, maybe we should have done Like a Boss.
Maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe. Underwater is the thing, right? January is the dumping ground for movies that they couldn't find good sort of tentpole dates to put in and succeed. And all these movies that come out in January would have gotten crushed everywhere else is basically what they're saying.
Yeah, most likely.
So typically these aren't very good movies. There's occasional surprises here and there. Yeah. There's a Cloverfield every once in a while that gets thrown in.
Yeah, I would even you get something like last year we had Escape Room was a nice it was a surprise, I think. It's not as good as because we did watch it again for the CinemaSins video, and I don't think it was quite as good, and there's definitely issues with it, but it's a very fun movie, and it was a surprise hit. It's getting a sequel. It's coming out later this year.
Yeah.
Every now and then you get a bit of a diamond in the rough. I don't know that this is it.
Now, no. immediately, when you saw the trailers for this, you thought of Leviathan, Deep Star 6,
yeah.
The Abyss,
yeah.
Sphere. All these movies, these underwater
aliens,
yeah, and well, and of course that's ultimately what this movie really sort of patterns itself with. Although maybe not so much. The aliens was more about it had a lot more weaponry and action. And
No. Yeah, and I don't think this is very similar to Aliens in most regards. I'm just saying when you see the preview, you immediately think
you see a team of people in a place that normal people don't ever spend their time, and there are creatures and so on and so forth.
Exactly.
This is headed by Kristen Stewart, who's going to be 30 this year.
Wow.
That don't make you feel old. Nothing will.
What was her so Panic Room? Was that kind of her first?
That was her first big one.
Okay.
And that was where I first saw her anyway. And of course, rose to fame with Twilight.
And you know what? Make fun of people for doing movies like that all you want. But God, look at the career. Her and Robert Pattinson both. Just look at the career they've been able to have just from the exposure that Twilight got them for other people, but B, also just the financial security. I mean, you can just kind of go do whatever the hell you want. It's like after George Clooney, was thinking about doing Batman and Robin, and his accountant said, "Well, if you do this, you're good."
Mm-hmm.
Go do whatever, whatever you want. So she's been able to do a lot of interesting movies. I feel like she's kind of going back to Hollywood almost, though, because she did Charlie's Angels earlier this year. And now we have this. I still could see where she would find this a little more interesting than your average big budget film, I guess. But this still feels a little more mainstream than what she had been doing.
Yeah.
Stuff like Personal Shopper
right.
and Lizzie.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So,
But yeah, the basic story is there's a bunch of people who work in this. It's an underwater facility about 6 miles, I think, is somewhere underneath the water. They are drilling, I'm assuming, for oil down in the ocean.
Yeah, I guess. I never could quite figure out what they were doing, because this movie kind of just throws us in to everything.
It's an energy source of some sort. Yeah. That's all we know. But they're drilling, that's the thing. And there's, like, I guess, multiple drills set around the bottom of this ocean floor or something like that.
Yeah.
And something happens where, you know, it's the whole, like, flooding of water comes through. And her character, Nora, teams up with this guy who is played by Mamadou Athi. I can't remember what his character's name was, though.
This is the weirdest IMDb page I've ever seen in my life, FYI. There's like no character name. Maybe some of these people just didn't have character
names. Well, no, it's because the IMDb has started doing that stupid shit where they don't put the character names. Well, although this one looks like just nobody's filled it out except for a couple. So, but there are, you go to the IMDb for something like The Godfather sometimes, and then you won't see character names.
Oh, gotcha. But apparently he was in The Circle, which I did not see. Yeah. And he's going to be in Jurassic World 3.
Yeah. So there's a whole thing there where they, you know, you have water flowing in. She has to do something to stop the damage. And then there's a whole assessment. Is there anybody still alive? Is there, you know, is there any way to go and all that? And they run into Vincent Cassell, who's like the main boss guy of this whole thing. Yep. And he sets out after some assessment, sets out a chart of some sort where it's like, we've got to do this that's really fucked up, and then we've got to do this that's really fucked up to get to this one place that may not even be, safe anymore.
Exactly.
But we have to do that. That's the basic premise.
Yeah, because where they are is obviously not safe, and they're talking about how the stuff above them is, you know, crashing down on them.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to just kind of do whatever they have to do.
Yeah.
Try to get out of there, which involves walking, I guess, on the ocean floor, which you see that in the trailer.
Right.
So
before we get into spoilers and everything, I will say this, and this is the non-spoilery part. There are some decent things in this movie, where I feel like I feel like movies are pretty good when it's not just the creature they have to worry about. There's all sorts of other challenges and everything.
I agree. Yeah.
However, I don't think the way this movie is filmed really helps you out very often in that regard. So like there's some decently cool things in here. And I'll get into one that I thought was actually really good in spoilers, but overall I found this really hard to watch.
Yeah. I thought the first like 10 minutes I was thinking I was going to be into this because, I don't know if this is full on in media res the way it starts. Cause it doesn't really, it just propels forward. So I don't know what you call that, but we kind of, it's actually a scene in the preview. I guess we can talk about it more in spoilers, but it kind of starts, in the action's very quick. Like it's very much like just, you're less than a minute in, probably maybe 2 minutes in.
Yeah. It's like some Kristen Stewart narration for about a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's just, the scene where she's brushing her teeth and stuff in the trailer. You know, that's where it starts. And I mean, so I thought that was kind of cool, cause it just kind of puts you right in there. But then, like I said, after like 10 minutes, it just, I don't know, it dwindled, it kept dwindling. And I had a hard time with it. This could be an old man thing. I mean, you know, I'm 43, but I couldn't understand some of the dialogue just because I think the action was like the background noise was so loud. Did you have this issue?
Yeah.
So I had a hard time even understanding, and they're talking about a lot of technical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't really hear what they're saying. I don't really know what they're trying to do. So that was hard to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the movie itself is just very jarring. Like, I don't know who's really to blame for that. I mean, I don't know if it's specific. I mean, I'm sure the director has a lot to do with it, but it doesn't look that good.
Yeah.
It's like you said, it's really difficult to watch. Some of it's the editing, some of it's just the murkiness of like when they're in the water and You know, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's, I think that's a great way to put this. This is a very hard movie to watch.
William Eubank directed this. He did a movie called The Signal, which I never saw that.
Maybe that's the one I've seen. I've seen a movie called The Signal, but I don't know if that's the one I've seen. But let me see. That is, yes, I believe this is the one I've seen. I think Lawrence Fishburne is in this. Yes, and this was also kind of a hard movie to watch. Olivia Cooke is in this too.
Yeah.
I don't remember much about it other than it didn't stick with me. Let's put it that way. It was just kind of one of those late night HBO movies or something.
So yeah, grading this, I don't think this movie is just total garbage. There's some decent performance things. There's a couple of cool things, but on the whole, it's not a very good movie. So I'm going to say this is a C- for me.
Yeah, I was back and forth. I mean, it just, because it kept getting worse as it went along for me. There are some decent scenes, and we'll talk about the creatures more in spoilers. There was some things about those that were interesting to me, but I guess I'll go D+. I was thinking D, but I think you're right. It's not just, so I'm still going to go D+, though. I can't quite get into C territory.
I think we're both saying this is sort of garbage.
Yeah, for sure.
And in fact, I would be tempted to go down another grade even, but others of you may have heard me say this before. I think once you get into D territory,
yeah,
you are in that absolute, like, you're almost getting to The Room. That's how bad it's getting.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's quite there, but it is close to it because it's you know, it's one of those.
It's one of those where, like you said, I think there's elements of it that work, but talking about how it's hard to watch, I just think as a movie, it fails. Kind of like Countdown. We talked about this with Countdown. And maybe there were some issues. Maybe there was some, you know, maybe there was some studio interference. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't really tell. And I hadn't heard anything about that, if there was, but I'm just saying that may be a possibility. But it felt like kind of one of those movies where it was tampered with to the point. And I think this is maybe moved once on, I don't know. But that also has to do with the Disney-Fox merger, so that might have nothing to do with, you know, even if they were going to release it at a different time.
Mm-hmm.
So I know exactly what you're saying.
All right, let's get on to spoilers for this.
And Miss Basie is Kaiser Soze.
Miss Luke's father is actually Darth Vader. She's the sister and the daughter.
No. I'm reading the books.
All right, so I'm not sure where do I want to start on this. Well, this isn't spoilery. I talked about this somewhat in the non-spoiler, but the main takeaway I have from this, I don't know what it is, but action directors who are making movies like this are obsessed with cutting throughout the entire thing.
Yep.
And this has been a problem now for a long time. This isn't a new problem.
Yeah.
You can go back to even, I would say, to the mid-90s, where the MTV style of editing is where it really started to come in.
I mean, I think Michael Bay has a little bit to do with it.
Michael Bay was a music video director who came in and started, like, let's do them like music videos. But Fincher did too, and Fincher didn't do that. At least I don't remember him doing that. But I do believe there was that sort of that MTV influence, and you can see that in all these action movies now. It gets to the point where they're just giving you snippets of things to look at.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, where's that? And then it cuts to something else before you can even decide where that's going to be. And it cuts to something else and you're like, okay, wait a minute, where's that? I don't even remember this being established at one point.
Yeah.
The place where they're at, all the things where everything is or all this, it's just constant through this movie.
There's a scene early on when they first start trying to make their way towards this, I can't remember what they called it, but it's a vessel that's got like the escape pods on it and stuff, and I think maybe the vessel would actually take them up maybe. And they're descending into the ocean so they can get to like the next point.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all crammed in like this little circular area, and I don't know why you wouldn't just do like a wide shot or maybe a couple of separate shots, but instead it just cuts everywhere. And I mean, And then eventually one of the characters ends up dying in that scene because his face, his mask cracks or whatever.
Yeah, which, by the way, those fucking masks are so ridiculously tough.
I know.
Like, to think that there's even one that could crack like that,
I know,
is, it strains credulity by the end of it.
Without something, like, hitting it or whatever. Because, yeah, you're right, they fall and they do all kinds of stuff.
There's a point where one of the creatures, like, wraps its fucking mouth around it.
Yeah.
And, and we're talking about these things have been smashing up the entire... underwater thing.
but that's a scene where I think what you're talking about comes into effect, because it's so frantic. And I mean, I guess that scene is kind of supposed to be, but it's too much. Like, it's just, it's almost like, you know, it's like they're trying to get the entirety of the madness of Uncut Gems into like this little circular thing. I don't know. It's crazy.
Well, we know that there's a deal with the, you know, the water pressure and the pressure and all this. You know, we know that there's stuff with that, but like, I started going, wait a minute, why? I know the helmet was defective, that was the main thing. But and then I was like, why do you need to open the door right now? Like, I was, you know, I was so like caught up in what the hell was going on, I didn't know why they wanted to.
There was like a little thing where they're I mean I got the impression the people in front of them that were opening the door couldn't hear them. You know, it was a quick thing, but still, it's a crazy scene. And it's an interesting idea, because then after that they're basically having Kristen Stewart and the other woman, they're having to...
who's played by Jessica Henwick, who a lot of people know from Game of Thrones as one of the Sand. Nymeria Sand, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
And she was also in Force Awakens as one of the fighter pilots.
But they're having to like float through like this dude's body, basically, because like he's gone everywhere. Mm-hmm. He's just, which I guess that's what happens when you implode.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't studied it.
But anyways, that was one example of a scene where I was just like, I was just so confused as to what I'm supposed to even be paying attention to.
Just, you know, the other thing about the cutting, it's not just happening during action scenes. It's happening in the middle of lines.
Yeah.
Like, I'm wondering if the issue is for some directors, or maybe editors, or maybe studios, I don't really know what's going on, but their take during the first part of their line is fine, and then the second part of their line, they're worried about something, either the performance, or they're better in another angle.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, he's good in this angle, and in the other angle, he's not as good. So why don't we just cut during the middle of the line, and we've got the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And it's happening like that even. That's how bad editing is right now.
No, that's true, and you get that a lot in this movie. So.
Yeah.
And they're in such and I think it's just they're so in these confined spaces where the way they shoot it, it just makes it so much worse, I think, because of the setting.
We don't know what this underwater facility is.
Exactly.
We haven't walked through this place. We don't know what it, you know, we don't know all the stuff.
And that's part of the movie's fault, because it chooses to start us in, you know, we don't even know who these people are. We don't know what their specialties are. So the movie has to show us in different ways because it chooses to start at this point. But if you're going to choose to start at that point, I'm fine with that. I think that's a cool idea. But it's almost like they had nothing in place. They wanted it to just be like a standard a version of this type of movie.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in these other ones, like, I had a lot of Deep Star 6, by the way, in this. In fact, if Brianna Evigan had been in this movie, I would have given this like another letter grade.
Yeah.
But because it's her dad.
Exactly.
But that movie, you know, I that was the funny thing. Like, Deep Star 6 is not a good movie. I think Deep Star 6 is probably a better movie than this.
Probably is.
At least in the sense that it can tell a story,
mm-hmm.
and we can follow it from point A to point B and not be, you know, but all these movies, they typically start off where we get introduced to the crew.
Mm-hmm.
This one chose not to do that, which I'm cool with that. But then you got to do something to help me understand what's going on, and they don't do that.
Are we supposed to believe that Vincent Cassell's daughter died at some point?
Yeah, she does actually find that, like, it looked like it was from, like, a funeral service or a memorial.
Okay, and that he's just guarded about his private life and everything? Is that what we're sort of supposed to get from that?
Yeah, and that's one part where I almost wonder, like, I almost wonder if this movie had, like, flashbacks or, you know, something in it that they decided to remove, because I felt like there was more to that than what we actually saw in the movie. Because there's a little bit when she first finds him, and you can tell they know each other really well, because he's like, Nora, and you know, she's like, you should have gone in an escape pod. You've got your daughter. And then later, there's something about where he says she's 14.
Yeah.
And then Kristen Stewart's like, well, she'd be my age.
Yeah, you know?
So then I knew there was something to that. And then, like I said, she finds that card.
Yeah. I had thoughts of John Candy in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles,
where
he's talking about his wife and saying, I haven't been home in years and all that. And, you know, I just didn't understand what the reasoning behind lying about that was.
Because there's so little to it, at least in the version that we saw. I mean, I just have no attachment to it.
That was the type of thing when, before we know that, you know, his daughter must have died, I was like, oh, well, that could be something that leads us to believe that he's done something wrong, or he's lying about something because whatever, and it just never materialized.
Or he's like losing his mind.
Or he's losing his mind. Yeah, either way.
Something's wrong with him. Yeah. I mean, something.
And especially the beginning when Kristen Stewart is saying, like, you don't, there's a, it's hard to tell the difference between waking and dreaming down here and everything. I was like, oh, we might have one of those mind trippy type of things. I don't think the movie would be much better, but but if they were to go that route, it would have been better.
I know what you're saying. Or maybe, like you said, like maybe he did do something. Maybe he knew about the creatures. You know, maybe there was something there. But I think it was just that his daughter died. And
of course, if you want to start getting all philosophical about a movie like this and everything, I mean, it's your usual, I guess, what would you call it? It's not a morality tale. Maybe it is. I don't know. The reason why it's almost like you're getting paid back in life by trying to drill in the natural resources. And you're getting punished for trying to, you're getting punished for making money, essentially. In this kind of way where you're raping the world of its natural resources. Of course, monsters that we didn't know about are coming out to punish you for it and everything.
Well, and the monsters themselves, I mean, they're very Lovecraftian. Like, they're very, that's what I kept seeing. I mean, they're very CG.
Mm-hmm.
First off, they don't, but they look okay. The talk you're talking about, where which was a ridiculous scene, but the scene where Kristen Stewart gets eaten. Kristen Stewart lives, but she does get eaten at a point, and somehow her helmet survives.
Yeah.
That actually looked kind of cool.
That was the one thing in this that I was like, man, a little bit more of this type of thing would have gone a long way.
Because I'm cool with camp. Like, in a movie like this, I'm perfectly fine with it just being campy as hell. Like, I liked her blasting her way out of there like it was like a Sharknado movie.
Because we always see, in these situations, the hero getting swallowed and then the creature bursting out. But in this case, we actually saw her getting swallowed.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really cool touch.
Yeah.
And everything. And I was like, God, if they could have just done this more often, I would have been all over this movie.
And she literally she shoots her way through after, because it's interesting. It kind of like, I can't think what to compare it to, but it kind of just forms around her. Like, it kind of like, it just starts going down on her whole body and just kind of forms around her. And then she all of a sudden just blasts through it with that gun or whatever she had. That was another thing, though. You were talking about the helmets all of a sudden being durable. And then also the red alert thing. There was a moment where the other character, the one from Game of Thrones, and her, I guess, boyfriend, they were a couple on the ship together working, and Kristen Stewart's trying to help them. Both of them have had red glowing lights for I don't know how long, because we even find out they've just been out in the middle of the ocean for a while, because she was in that she was in that ship or whatever for a minute.
Yeah, I didn't understand. There was very big discussion as to whether they would even have enough oxygen to get to the place. And then she's been in the part of the ship while they've been feared lost.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, like, she catches up to her, dragging her boyfriend through the, and it's like, oh, it's okay. It's they haven't lost oxygen.
So I never really even felt like they were in that much danger, even though they were in an insanely dangerous situation. Mm-hmm. Somehow the movie screwed that up because it was like, oh, well, they'll figure out. And even that whole scene, I mean, I swear to God, that helmet was blinking red forever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how they made it into the back all the way to the shuttle or whatever they had to get to, because they had to go through the monsters, which that was part of that scene where she gets eaten. Mm-hmm. That whole sequence was actually really pretty well done, other than, I mean, the CG is a little annoying, mm-hmm. but I've almost kind of gotten used to that, sadly.
Yeah.
But the idea of them having to, like, walk through these sleeping creatures that they know nothing about, they don't know how they attack, they don't know, you know, they're just having to do it because they don't have a choice. It's basically like if, like, you had to get through, like, a pit of snakes.
Mm-hmm.
To get to wherever safety was, and you just had to do it.
Yeah, you think maybe this movie has a little bit of Pitch Black in it too?
Oh yeah, Pitch Black. No, I felt that. Yeah,
and then we were talking about.
It's very Fox, actually. It's just, or it's, wait, Pitch Black might be Universal, actually.
So Pitch Black, but yeah, Pitch
it,
Black
it
is Universal.
I said that wrong.
Yeah. But it has a little bit of Pitch Black in it. It's got a little bit of like you know, you're talking about Deep Star 6. There was in Deep Star 6, they were talking about how lights. I mean, I think the Meg even has a situation where lights are attracting these things. Yeah. But that's another like little element in there where lights are a big deal.
And I think there's the Abyss is very relevant. I think also. I mean, I think it's just a mixture of all these movies. I mean, it also felt very Leviathan with the way the creature was attacking, and you know, obviously it didn't have the Leviathan. I think they actually can become creatures. I believe that's the one. I don't know. I get these very confused. They all came out like the same fucking year.
Yeah.
But
I know.
but yeah. So it definitely has elements of all those things, and I mean it's pretty much worse than all of them, actually. Leviathan's probably even better, and Leviathan's not good either. This isn't a very good movie. I guess Kristen Stewart's good. I don't think there's much there for her to do, but she, like she always does, she creates a character.
There's one moment in there that I thought that she acted like brilliantly, and I thought that was a really it was towards the end, but like I thought that was really well done. But yeah, you're right. She didn't have much to do. And then again, we have another one of these situations. Just like I thought about Avengers Endgame, when they have three people left and only two escape pods are working.
Yes.
And Kristen Stewart has basically decided she's going to sacrifice herself and everything.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was thinking about Avengers Endgame when Hawkeye and Black Widow have to fight to decide who's going to die in this situation.
Well, and I don't understand, like those escape pod scenes too, like they seem pretty roomy. Like, I don't know, maybe there is something about escape pods and underwater vessels that I just don't have knowledge of, but I think that would have been worth an attempt. Like,
yeah.
Kristen Stewart and I'm sorry, what was her name again?
She's Jessica Henwick.
Yeah. They could have fit in there together. Like, they probably together actually make up like a normal size person.
I agree. Maybe there's something about being underwater and the pressure and
that.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
The other thing,
enough oxygen.
The other thing that the movie sets up is that if she doesn't blow up that core at the end, those creatures that are like all like attached to the main big one, were about to swim up and capture those escape pods. So she needed to blow that up, or else that would have happened. It's one of those things that's almost ludicrous in movies where they always do that type of thing. And like I was sitting there thinking. First off, I have a mini pronged thing about this escape pod thing, but first off, even if everybody had shown up alive to this place, there would have only been two people who would have been able to get to. So like they're all necessarily dying essentially for the movie's
sake. No kidding.
Sake.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, we don't want her to die in vain, so therefore we're going to have to make it where she makes the ultimate sacrifice and everything. It reminded me of Passengers a little bit, because in Passengers, the whole thing, they justify Chris Pratt's actions in Passengers by saying, well, if he didn't wake up Jennifer Lawrence, the whole ship would have blown up. So therefore, it was good that he did that. You know, doing that whole, like, you know, results-oriented thinking about, you know, the horrible thing he's done.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's one of those things I'm just like, God, you just constructed this whole thing perfectly, didn't you? You killed off a bunch of guys, and then you have two escape pods at the end, and thank God she stayed back, or else she wouldn't have. And I also wonder if she had gone and Jessica Henwick had stayed, would she have even noticed that those creatures were coming out?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. Hey, yeah, you had to make Kristen Stewart die.
And she was like the engineer too, because I think that's the whole thing. She's like, I can actually fix these.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, then why wouldn't you let her try to fix it real quick? Like, at least she can go take a look at it. It's not going to hurt anybody, you know? You're right. It's like you have to, like, it's like Kristen Stewart's character. I mean, they set her up immediately as like the sacrificed lamb because, you know, she's got nobody to go back to, and except, I guess, a dog, and which she randomly mentions, named Jim, I think, or something. Yeah. But she's lost her fiance. I don't think she has any children or anything. So, and then the whole thing about those other two characters, they're together. So, well, that's another thing. What if one of them had died? And it's like, oh, we forgot. We haven't even talked about T.J. Miller being in this movie for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But what if it was like her and T.J. Miller? Would they have left T.J. Miller there?
Yeah, exactly. It would have been actually interesting to see if there would have been a fight over the escape pods at the end.
I will commend the movie for that. Like, they don't have the traditional... just that asshole crew member that turns on somebody.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, T.J. Miller kind of comes... probably just because it's T.J. Miller, but he kind of comes off a little cringy, but... I mean, he even has a couple of moments where, like, when they lose Rodriguez, or I think it's Rodriguez, isn't that maybe that was his name?
Not sure.
I don't know. When they lose the guy, he starts laughing, and they're like, what are you laughing at? He's like, oh, there was a joke that he always told that was really stupid, and then he tells the joke, and it's like an okay moment, you know? And you have a lot of those, but I just assumed, like, Miller was going to try to, like, get one of them killed to save his own ass or something, or somebody was going to do that.
Yeah,
and that never happens.
Yeah, it's one of those, thank God, it was a mercy killing for his character in this mercy killing for us.
Yeah.
Because he's just one of those, like, all throughout this movie, the thing that just bothered me about him was just how many times he was like, he would do something where he would pretend something was happening and be like, ha ha, just joking.
Yeah, he's that guy. He's the
jokester. I fucking hate that shit.
Yeah, that was like, that's always the thing, you know, like in the Friday the 13th films, there's always the prankster.
And I kept thinking, that his cry wolf type of thing was going to pay off in some way. Where he was like, he just kept doing it, and then by the fourth time, he's like, "Oh my God, look at this, guys!" And then like everybody's like, "Eh, whatever."
Yeah.
And somebody dies because
something like that.
Didn't pay that off either. He's just an annoying character.
Oh, and his scene was bad too. His death scene, because you really don't. I never could even figure out what it was they were trying. Like, I knew they were trying to get to another place, but they didn't do a good job of making that clear. Like, why they can only go one at a time. They had to drag them. And then I couldn't really even tell what was, like, you saw something was coming up behind them, but I couldn't figure out what it was that got caught. Like, something got caught, and then he got pulled back. And then there was a cool image where the blood goes into the helmet.
Yeah.
Which is a really kind of creepy imagery.
Mm-hmm.
But
there were a lot of stuff like that. There was a lot of stuff like that. Yeah. There's a point where they're going down that one thing, and there's, like, I guess some wreckage or something in the way. And Vincent Cassell says something like, it's too tight for us to fit. And Kristen Stewart's like, well, I'm the smallest. Let me go. And then she goes down in this thing. Mm-hmm. And there's like, it doesn't, they all end up going the same route she goes.
Yeah.
She doesn't do anything to knock wreckage out of the way or anything like that. She just goes in and says, okay, I'm in here.
Yeah.
And so everybody else just goes down.
Well, they even have that part at the beginning where they're crawling through that, like, ridiculously tight space. And I think she's the only one that could even fit through all that. But somehow T.J. Miller, who's like four times her size, he's just crawling behind her like it's nothing.
Yeah, I just didn't understand that at all. Like, and again, it could be just us being old farts.
Yeah.
But I must have not heard something right, because I thought that because she was the smallest and she went into that one little area, nobody else was going. Yeah. She was going to have to do something to open up a thing so that they could go to wherever she was, but that's not what happened.
I'm telling you, man, on the not hearing part, I don't think it's just us. I'm telling you that the background noise versus the dialogue, especially for like the first 30 minutes, is not good. Like,
no,
it's like it reminded me of like going a little behind the scenes. It reminded me of us getting an edit where we have there's too much background noise over narration, mm-hmm. over Jeremy,
mm-hmm.
and that's exactly what I was thinking, like, because I was like, God, I just cannot hear what they're saying. I need subtitles now.
I think you're right. I think there's been some especially in movies like these, there have been a loss of the art of the whatever it is, if it's the sound mixing, I'm assuming, where they're trying to I would rather hear the people talking than any loud noise that is supposed to get me involved in the movie. Like I can deal with that if you just tone it down slightly.
I mean, because what we're hearing is maybe it actually is an earthquake, and then that's where the creatures come from. I guess that's kind of what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But whether it's the earthquake or the creatures, that's what we're hearing in the background. But you could make that softer. I mean, you could still have it in the background, but it mm-hmm. doesn't have to be like, you know, clank, 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 you mm-hmm. know, when somebody's giving like important information about what they have to do and we need to know. And then, of course, you've got stuff exploding around them and like, you know, computers, sirens and alarms. And it's too much.
Yeah.
Just the sound guy just went overboard. He was like, you know, I don't know if they did research on these like underwater labs. Like, this is exactly what would happen.
Well, and you have so many different things too, where you have the people who are doing the sound mixing. They're listening to it in their studio, and it's at their perfect whatever it is that they and plus all these people who worked on the movie. They probably have read the script and seen many takes, and they probably know what's being said, and they don't even think about. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Oh, they can't hear that. But then not only do you have a final sound mix, but then it goes into movie theaters where they have their own sound setup and everything. And you don't know who's.
And that could definitely be part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it could definitely be your theater situation. Some people might listen to this and be like, I had no issues.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Good. Glad.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you, fuckface.
And I'm sure there's things we miss, because I feel like that's the biggest comment we get is, man, you guys must not have been paying attention to this movie. When we say we don't know things, but I'm doing my best.
Yeah, I mean, we're watching it one time, we're watching a million other movies along with it, and then like when it comes to review something.
Yeah, and I mean, this movie isn't really hard to follow in the sense that, like, I mean, you'll know. I mean, you get the basics. You know, they need to get from here to here to survive. But all this stuff in between, it's hard to tell it's hard to figure out where they are, like, in location wise. I thought the way when he showed the map, it looked to me like those walkways were covered,
mm-hmm.
and they were just going to go to like three different stations, and then once they got to that final one, that's when they had to get in the water, and then they just had to walk across. But they actually got in the water pretty early.
Yeah.
And so I didn't understand that. Like, I was already lost.
And it could be one of those things where the plan was to do that, but something was broken or something. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's too much else to talk about. But it's just, I mean, I don't know if it's really a wasted opportunity. I don't know what exactly makes this a better movie, but it is a really good, for the most part, it's a good cast. Kristen Stewart's really good. I like Vincent Cassell, mm-hmm. You know, Ocean's 12.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the former Mr. Monica Bellucci. I don't know if he's still married to her, but he's actually in a really cool movie too. For some reason, I was thinking about this last night when I was watching this, because he was in a movie with Jean Reno in like 2000, 2001. I think it's called Crimson Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody wants to look for that little side note to an underrated gem, maybe. But I like him. I don't really like T.J. Miller, but you know, he is what he is.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the cast was fine.
By the way, Vincent Cassell no longer with Monica Bellucci.
I thought that was right.
2013.
I did not think they were together anymore. But he's very memorable, I believe, in Ocean's 12.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
is he like the Frenchman or what is it?
Yeah, he's
or something.
I think that's about right. But yeah, he's the guy whose Ocean's team is going up against.
yeah.
Steal a jewel, and
yeah,
he goes through that. He has that big dance sequence with the laser lights. But yeah, so anyway, yeah, we didn't like this 2020. In fact, there's not very many movies that I'm excited about seeing in January. But
we'll do what we can.
Yeah, exactly. All right, what did you think about this? Go to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. We also have SoundCloud and Discord. If you want to go to Discord, you can go to Facebook and ask for a link on the private messages, or you can go to Reddit and go to the right side of the page and find a link there. Jonathan?
You can reach me on Twitter at SamLoomis13, and you can also hear me every week on the Behind the Sins podcast with Danae Hughes and Aaron Dicer.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this mini-pod. It's Chris Atkinson and Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.